Good morning.
Good morning.
Can we turn to the book of Exodus? No, just kidding. Job. Just trying to keep everyone on their toes. We're in Job chapter 27. We're going to start in Job 27. And we're going to read chapters 27 and 28. And that's going to be on page 808 in the Chapel Bible. Job chapter 27. Moreover, Job continued his discourse and said, "As God lives, who has taken away my justice, and the Almighty, who has made my soul bitter, as long as my breath is in me, and the breath of God is in my nostrils, my lips will not speak wickedness, nor my tongue utter deceit. Far be it from me that I should say you are right. Till I die, I will not put away my integrity from me. My righteousness I hold fast and will not let it go. My heart shall not reproach me as long as I live. May my enemy be like the wicked, and he who rises up against me like the unrighteous. For what is the hope of the hypocrite, though he may gain much, if God takes away his life? Will God hear his cry when trouble come upon him? Will he delight himself in the Almighty? Will he always call on God? I will teach you about the hand of God. What is with the Almighty I will not conceal. Surely all of you have seen it. Why then do you behave with complete nonsense? This is the portion of a wicked man with God, and the heritage of oppressors received from the Almighty. If his children are multiplied, it is for the sword, and his offspring shall not be satisfied with bread. Those who survive him shall be buried in death, and their widow shall not weep. Though he heaps up silver like dust, and piles up clothing like clay, he may pile it up, but the just will wear it, and the innocent will divide the silver. He builds his house like a moth, like a booth which a watchman makes. The rich man will lie down, but not be gathered up. He opens his eyes, and he is no more. Terrors overtake him like a flood. A tempest steals him away in the night. The east wind carries him away, and he is gone. It sweeps him out of his place. It hurls against him and does not spare. He flees desperately from its tower. Men shall clap their hands at him and shall hiss him out of his place. Surely there is a mine for silver and a place where gold is refined. Iron is taken from the earth, and copper is smelted from ore. Man puts an end to darkness and searches every recess for ore in the darkness and the shadow of death. He breaks open a shaft away from people, in places forgotten by feet. They hang far away from men. They swing to and fro. As for the earth, from it comes bread, but underneath it is turned up as by fire. Its stones are the source of sapphires, and it contains gold dust. That path no bird knows, nor has the falcon's eye seen it. The proud lions have not trodden it, nor has the fierce lion passed over it. He puts his hand on the flint. He overturns the mountains at the roots. He cuts out channels in the rocks, and his eye sees every precious thing. He dams up the streams from trickling. What is hidden he brings forth to light. But where can wisdom be found, and where is the place of understanding? Man does not know its value, nor is it found in the land of the living. The deep says, it is not in me, and the sea says, it is not with me. It cannot be purchased for gold, nor can silver be weighed for its price. It cannot be valued in the gold of Ophir, in precious onyx or sapphire. Neither gold nor crystal can equal it, nor can it be exchanged for jewelry of fine gold. No mention shall be made of coral or quartz, for the price of wisdom is above rubies. The topaz of Ethiopia cannot equal it, nor can it be valued in pure gold. From where then does wisdom come, and where is the place of understanding? It is hidden from the eyes of all living, and concealed from the birds of the air. Destruction and death say, we have heard a report about it with our ears. God understands its way, and he knows its place, for he looks to the ends of the earth and sees under the whole heavens to establish a weight for the wind and apportion the waters by measure. When he made a law for the rain and a path for the thunderbolt, then he saw wisdom and declared it. He prepared it. Indeed, he searched it out. And to man he said, behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom, and to depart from evil is understanding. We've been looking, last time we saw the last thing that Bildad had to say in chapter 25. We saw Bildad's response was sort of, he was trying to explain how powerful God is. God is this all-powerful being, and nothing is clean in his sight, even man, who is just nothing but a worm. And he was sort of implying that Job is just a worm. Saying it of all men, but talking to Job, and sort of, in a way, belittling Job and sort of belittling what God thinks of us as human beings. We know that he was willing to send his son for us, so he has some value that he sees in us. And we saw Job's response was sort of along the same lines. He was very sarcastic initially in chapter 26 about how you've helped so much, how you've helped the one who has no power, how you've saved the arm that has no strength, and being very sarcastic with them and implying that they really haven't been a help at all. And he talks also about the wisdom and power of God. He talks about how hell is naked before him. He stretches out the north over empty space, and he hangs the earth on nothing and binds up the water in these thick clouds, and all of the power of God he's sort of seeing in this beautiful, these beautiful words, this poetry here. And he agrees, God is all-powerful, and God is in absolute control. We saw that in chapter 26. And then as we go forward in chapter 27 and 28, we're going to see more of Job's response. Everything has sort of been building up to this point. All the conversations, everything that's happened to Job, the Lord was allowing. His friends coming, the conversation with his friends, the Lord was allowing to bring this out of Job, these next few chapters. We're going to see he's reached the end where he's going to just let everything out. And then we're going to finally see something, there's something in there that the Lord was trying to show you. And we're going to see that. We're going to get to that near the 29 and 30 and there, but we're going to see what's really in the heart of Job. And this is what God was trying to bring out. And this is what God was really, he used all of these things. He used the devil. He used the sorrow. He used his friends to bring this out so that he could show it to Job. This is God doing a work in this man. And it's really nice to see. The other thing, just quickly, before we get into these chapters, is we haven't really talked too much about poetry itself in the Bible, but it's very interesting. Whenever I think about an eighth of the Bible is poetry, a significant amount of the Bible is poetry. All of the Psalms, you have the book of Job, you have the Proverbs, you have so much that's written in a different way than the rest of Scripture, but it's there to teach us. And the wonderful thing about poetry is that it creates an image, and it's easier to sort of visualize and understand the concept that's being talked about. And there is a portion, just to, a really good resource for this. There's something called the Bible Project. They do little videos on different topics in Scripture. They do like different books of the Bible. They've talked about poetry as well. And one of the examples I'm actually going to read from the book of Exodus. I wasn't kidding, but you don't have to turn there. I'm just going to read a few verses. In Exodus chapter 14, verse 21, it says, "And Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and Jehovah made the sea go back by a strong east wind all the night, and made the sea dry land, and the waters were divided." So that's what actually happened, right? That's what happened. And then in Exodus 15, we have this song of praise that they're singing to the Lord. And it says in chapter 15, and it says in verse 8, it says, "And by the breath of thy nostrils, the waters were heaped up. The streams stood as a mound. The depths were congealed in the heart of the sea." You get an image. You get the breath of God separating the water, and the water being heaped up, like congealed, like forming more than water. When something congeals, it's forming a thicker substance, and you just have this image now. You see it. And that's the beauty of poetry. And even, I'm not going to talk about structure or anything like that. That's beyond me. I'm not anything with English. But just a lot of the poetry in Scripture is in sort of couplets, so two lines next to each other, sort of either showing something similar or something different, or trying to make a comparison. And it's creating images in our minds and sort of helping us understand different concepts. And that's most of the book of Job. We've seen they've used all these concepts to describe how the wicked man is going to suffer, how powerful God is. We're going to see later when God talks and when God's showing who he is to Job, just the beautiful imagery we're going to see. And it's enjoyable to read, but it's just enjoyable to see it in your mind. Obviously, these men weren't talking to each other in poetry. That's not how it was. They had a conversation together. It's It's recorded for us as this epic poem, but it's helping us to understand a little more of who God is. And God's able to use different forms and different ways of showing us more of himself. And he uses poetry. God is an artist. You look around, you look outside, you see the masterpieces of what God has done. But he can even use poetry to show us more of himself. It's just, it's really nice. But we're chapter 27 of Job, verse 1, it says, he continued his parable. The word continued there is sort of took up again. He retakes up his parable. So it's my opinion. I don't have any way to prove this, but I think he paused between chapter 26 and 27. I think he gave them an opportunity to say something. They didn't have anything to say. And Job said, well, I have more. Let me keep going. And because every time you see they've been exchanging words, and I think he paused to give them an opportunity to say something. They had nothing to say, so he's going to keep on. And he says in verses 2 through 6 that as long as I have breath in me, I'm not going to say that you're right. I'm never going to say that you're right because you're not. He was standing for what he believed. And he even says, as God lives, who has taken away my justice, and the Almighty who has made my soul bitter, as he lives, I'm not going. And as long as there's breath in me, and the breath of God is in my nostrils, my lips are not going to speak wickedness. I'm not going to utter deceit. I'm not going to justify you, because that would be wrong. Everything you've said about the wicked person, if I justified you and I said that you were right, I would become that. And I'm not going to do that. So Job is holding fast to his integrity. And he's not going to allow them to convince him that somehow he's done something he hasn't done. Sometimes, if you're in an argument with someone, you just give up and you say, fine, you're right, even if you don't agree with them. Job's not that kind of person. He's going to go to his grave. I will not admit that you're right, because you're not. And he's willing to die without letting go of this argument. As long as he lives, his heart will not reproach him. That he knows that, I know that I have not done anything wrong. And then in verses 7 through 10, He talks about the hypocrite, and he says, may my enemy be like the wicked, and he who rises up against me like the unrighteous. And he's talking to his friends here, so he's saying two things in verse 7 through 10. He says, what's the hope of the hypocrite, though he gain much, if God takes away his life? So it's part of it is, what would it benefit me if I became a hypocrite? But then the other part of it is, if you guys keep in this path, accusing an innocent person, you are going to become exactly what you're talking about. So there's two things. I'm not going to admit that you're right and become a hypocrite. It's not worth it. And also, you're becoming like an enemy. You're becoming like these wicked people who are accusing, and you have no proof, and you're becoming hypocrites yourselves. And then as you go down in verses 11 through 12, he says, let me actually teach you something about God. You've been trying to tell me about God and who God is, but let me tell you. And surely all of you have seen it. It's not like you've not seen the world, but why are you acting this way? Why are you, the New King James says, why are you behaving with complete nonsense? And just the comfort level that he had with his friends to be able to be honest, you appreciate it, that he's not pulling, none of them are pulling any punches here in this conversation. They're just telling people. They all love each other. I think you can sort of see the undercurrent of love that's there between these people, but he's honest, and he's telling them, I'm going to tell you. And then in verses 13 through down through 23, it's very similar to the passages we've seen, that this is the portion of a wicked man with God. Even if his children are multiplied, it's for the sword. So even if he has wealth, if he has prosperity, it's going to be lost. You see that his offspring shall not be satisfied. There's no satisfaction. Those who survive him shall be buried in death. Their widow shall not weep. Though he heaps up silver like dust and clothing like clay, he'll pile it up, but he's not going to enjoy it. There's no enjoyment for the wicked person in this world. In verse 18, he builds his house like a moth, like a booth which the watchman makes. Something temporary, something very fragile that's gone in a moment. And the rich man will lie down, but not be gathered up. He opens his eyes, and he is no more. Terrors overtake him like a flood. A tempest steals him away in the night. The east wind carries him away, and he is gone. It sweeps him out of his place. It hurls him It hurls against him and does not spare. He flees desperately from its power. That this is the end of the wicked man. He's just washed away, swept away. There's nothing lasting from the life of the wicked man. And verse 23, men shall clap their hands at him and shall hiss him out of his place. They want nothing to do with it. It's a shock to even see. That this is the life of the wicked man. Job agrees with, he's said many similar things to what they've said. But this is reality. No, this isn't me. What he's going through and what the wicked man, it's different. I'm going to tell you this is how life actually works. And then 28 is just a beautiful, 28 is a beautiful chapter. We talked relatively recently about wisdom. Brother Steve talked to us about growing in wisdom. He didn't talk about this chapter. He was going to leave it for me, but I told him he could, but he said no, it was okay. But it's just a beautiful chapter. We get this amazing imagery here of men mining the earth for precious, precious stones and gold and materials. In verses 1 through 11, he says there's a place for the silver. There's a place where gold is refined. Iron is taken from the earth. Copper is melted from the ore. And there's valuable material that men search for in the earth. There's things of tremendous value to human beings. And he says in verse 3, man puts an end to darkness and searches every recess for ore in the darkness and the shadow of death. So they'll dig and go into these caves and these tunnels. They bring light down with them to scatter the darkness so that they can see what they're doing. In verse 4, it talks about he breaks open a shaft away from people and talks about them hanging far away from men. You picture in your mind those men in the mines hanging from ropes, mining the earth, the different practices they have for excavating deep in these mountains and tunnels and caves. And you just see it swinging to and fro, their determination to find gold, to find jewels, to find silver, to find these things. And he says, from the earth bread comes, but underneath is that is turned up as fire. It seems like he knew that under the earth was the molten core of the earth, the lava, the heat under the earth. And he talks about its stones are the source of sapphires and gold dust. And that path, the path deep into the earth for that material, the birds don't know it. The falcon's eye hasn't seen it. The ability of a falcon, a bird of prey, their vision is so good. But there's places where they haven't seen, those depths into the earth where this precious material is. The proud lions who roam and they're called the king of the jungle, the proud lions, they haven't trodden it either. Man has found these hidden treasures, nor has the fierce lion passed over it. And then he puts his hand on the flint, he overturns the mountains at the roots, just thinking he'll turn how much dirt and earth they'll go through to find this precious material. He cuts out channels in the rocks, and his eye sees every precious thing. They'll cut out pathways through the rocks, and then he dams up streams from trickling. They'll change the course of water to get to what they want. And what is hidden, he brings forth to light. Just this incredible imagery of mining and the practices of mining. And then in verse 12, he says, but where can wisdom be found? We can find any sort of precious thing we want in the earth. We can look and find the gold and the sapphires and the topaz and the rubies. We can look and we find them, but where can you find wisdom? You can't mine for it. It's nothing you can, by force and sheer determination, find. And that's his point. And where can wisdom be found? Where is the place of understanding? Man does not know its value, nor is it found in the land of the living. Man doesn't appreciate the value of wisdom. They appreciate the value of gold. They appreciate the value of sapphires, and they're willing to dig and dig and dig and work and work and work to find it, but not for wisdom. And he says, the deep says it's not in me, and the sea says it's not with me. It's not in the depths of the ocean. It's not in the depths of the earth. Where can wisdom be found? It can't be purchased for gold, nor can silver be weighed for its price. It can't be valued with the gold of Ophir or the precious onyx or the sapphire. Neither gold nor crystal can equal it, nor can it be exchanged for jewelry of fine gold. No mention shall be made of coral or quartz, for the price of wisdom is above rubies. Just there's nothing on earth more valuable than wisdom. No precious material, no matter how rare it is, no matter how valuable it is, can equal wisdom. It's just enjoyable to read this. And the price is above rubies. The other thing that's above rubies in Scripture is the woman of worth, but that's a different topic. But it's just how valuable wisdom is. And the topaz of Ethiopia cannot equal it, nor can it be valued in pure gold. All the different types of gold he says here, the gold of Ophir, fine gold, pure gold, none of it can equal wisdom. And then he says, but where does it come from in verse 20? Where does it come from? And it's hidden from the eyes of all living and concealed from the birds of the air. And he says, destruction and death say, we have heard a report about it with our ears. God understands its way. Wisdom, God is the source. God is that source of wisdom. And he's the one who knows its place. God alone is the source and the supply of wisdom. You can see that as we go down here. For he looks to the ends of the earth and sees under the whole heavens. So God looks and he sees everything. He has this, God is all-knowing and God sees everything. He's omniscient. And he establishes a weight for the wind, that he knows how strong, how forceful, how heavy the wind needs to be. He's the one who apportions, he measures out the waters. There needs to be this much here, that much there, this much here. He measured the waters. He made a law for the rain, a path for the thunderbolts. Just think it's like he was sitting there planning that how the thunderbolt is going to come down through the sky to the earth. He made that path. He decided it, and he decided how much water there would be in the ocean, how much would be in that lake, how much would be in that stream. He decided how heavy the wind would be this day, how heavy. All of this is in the mind of God. He's the one who's established all of this. It says, then he saw wisdom and declared it. He prepared it indeed. He searched it out. And then in verse 28, and to man he said, behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom, and to depart from evil is understanding. Wisdom is the fear of the Lord. All of this searching for gold and searching for all these precious things, you can't find it that way. Wisdom comes from fearing the Lord. And we have that in Proverbs as well. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. To know who God is and to have that fear and respect and reverence for God is where the source, this is where it starts. That's where wisdom starts. The wonderful thing is this, that wisdom is something that we can ask for and receive. You can search all you want for wisdom. You can look all over this earth for it. You're not going to find it. But you pray in faith to God, and he'll give it to you. Isn't that this? You read how precious it is, how precious and valuable and rare wisdom is, and yet it's something we can just obtain by asking God in faith. It's incredible. And do we do that? It's a challenge for us. Do we do that? And this is something everyone in this situation really needed. They needed wisdom. All of his friends were grasping, trying to find an answer for what had happened to Job. Their answer was wrong. Job was trying to understand why God allowed this. He didn't have an answer. And sometimes there's not an answer, but sometimes we need the wisdom of God to maybe just accept that he's doing something. Maybe we need the wisdom from God to not know exactly why, but trust him, that I know that he knows what he's doing. And Job, you see here, this is he's still just talking to his friends, but as when we get to the next chapter, we're going to see him start talking about himself and sort of just thinking about what life used to be like for him and sort of bemoaning everything that's happened. And he's going to talk about the prime of his life and, you know, when everyone looked up to him and when everything was so good, and then he's going to sort of, this is his last defense, what we're going to see next time. He's going to talk all about himself and everything that he's done and his integrity and everything. And that's really when we're going to see the heart of Job and what the Lord was trying to reveal. And it's all of this is just culminating to these next few chapters, to bring that out of Job. And part of you, part of me, when I read this, is, was there another way? Did he have to lose all these things, that his children have to die? Did you have to do that just to show this? But that's for the Lord. It's not for us to say, and then the Lord will speak for himself later. But it's just a nice thing to see that God is the source and supply of wisdom. That we can just simply, if any lack wisdom, let him ask of God who gives to all freely, without reproach, without a second thought. That he's willing to share this valuable resource that he alone has. That he wants to share his wisdom with us. But we have to ask and just come in faith and just pray for wisdom. And there's so many situations in life where we need to pray for wisdom. Lord, what do I do? Do I take this job? Do I take that job? Do I go here? Do I go there? What do you want me to do for school or for my job? What do I do in this situation? I don't know what to do. And we ask for wisdom, trusting God that he will supply it. He's given us so much. It's nothing for him to give us some wisdom. He's a generous and giving God. And we can just trust him for that. And may we just be encouraged by these words.